Well, please take your Bibles and turn to the book of James. So we have a couple of services that are really opportunities for us to do, as Pastor just mentioned, as we try to go after the Lord in an organized fashion. We would like to just call our attention to James chapter 3, and we might camp out there tonight as well. And perhaps on Monday, maybe not. We'll leave that one a little bit open. What we'll do tonight also is we'll walk through the different events and the different opportunities. I know that you've probably heard about these quite a few times, but I'll try to walk through them from our perspective to help us as we're inviting folks to be even clearer in our invitations. And so I'll bring that up tonight. But for some reason, if you can't be here tonight, or if you've got a contact that you're connecting with this afternoon, that it would be helpful for you to ask some specific details about one of those events, just find me after the service. I'll make sure and be in the foyer, and we can get you a couple of those details, because I know how much of your energies are being put into this week, in the life of this year, and evangelism. And it's just, if this would serve you, please, by all means, get it. And so just come find us, and we'll talk through the details of those events, so that you, maybe even this afternoon as you're inviting, can just be a little bit more intelligent in your invitation. And by God's grace, God would use that in their own life. There's an invitation or a question in James 3, verse 13. It's really a call to wisdom. He says in verse 13, "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthy, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there's confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." If you're looking for an outline to help you, the first question that we are going to anchor will be, who is wise? Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. Who is wise? Wisdom is needed by leaders. In context, if we're to go back to verse 1 of chapter 3, he says, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation." In context, he's talking to leaders. He's saying, hey, don't you know wisdom is needed? In fact, as I have been studying through James really since last January, and really conclusion with the end of the summer, as studying through that, I began to ask different people that have been in the ministry for numbers of years. I would just walk up to them and say, so what's the most confusing time in really your ministry thus far? And here are people that have been in ministry for 30, 40 years. And they looked at me, and it was almost like I was crazy. They look at me and say, without a doubt, right now. Aren't the days confusing? You have all different spectrums. I mean, you can look at things like where are you at in a theological system, or where are you at in your application of what we're going to do in worship, or where are you at in your own personal application and Christian liberty issues, and how do I be holy and yet how do I be relevant? And then you could go through all of our whole life, and there's wisdom needed, isn't there? But let's just take it from a theoretical, and let's just put it down into a practical. I mean, how many of you have at least one relationship right now in your life that is difficult to navigate? Would you lift your hand? We need wisdom. In fact, how many of you have a circumstance right now that is hard to grasp the purpose of God? How many of you have a circumstance that you know God's good, you know that He's sovereign, but you're wrestling in the middle of that circumstance? You need wisdom. And so we see in the context that wisdom is needed by leaders, but if we're just to get the whole book, we just want to make sure that we're taking this text correctly. If you just look at James 1, you see this: James, a servant of God, to the and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greeting. My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into diverse temptations. Be happy in the middle of all these different trials. James is writing to all these different believers scattered abroad that they were pushed out of Jerusalem because of painful trials. And now he's telling them, I'm actually telling you to have joy in the midst of your trials and that you have a right response to trials, because he says, actually, this trial is going to, well, it's going to work patience. He says in verse 3, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. It worketh a faith that's real, but it actually produces a spiritual maturity. Verse 4, and let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. He says, be happy in the middle of your trial. Be happy in the midst of your pain. That doesn't make sense in our culture, does it? Be happy because it's actually causing you to have a faith that's real. It's actually causing you to have a faith that is mature. God is going to grow you up in this circumstance, but we're swimming and it's painful and we can't see the way and we're not sure what to do and we're not sure how to react and it's just, it's hard. We're getting tossed to and fro. In fact, we're double-minded sometimes, aren't we? How many of you understand what it is to know the character of God and know what you're supposed to do, but you just don't feel like it? We're double-minded. We're not sure which way to go and how to go. And so what is the invitation? He says, here you are in the midst of your problems. Here you are in the midst of your trials. And you should be thankful, but you're struggling being joyful. So what does he say you're supposed to do in verse 5? If any of you, I'm glad he said you, because there's men and women, right? If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. So who needs wisdom? We all need wisdom. But what is wisdom? As we begin to, in our heart, even begin to identify with this message, we're finding ourselves saying, yeah, I think what he's saying is true. I think where he's going is actually helpful. I do need wisdom. Well, what is wisdom? In verse 13, who is a wise man endued with knowledge among you? Here we go. Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. Because wisdom is not just intellectual in nature. It's not intellectual in nature, because some would say, I have wisdom because I have knowledge regarding that topic. Some would say, I have wisdom because I have a degree in that subject. But how many of you have known somebody with a lot of degrees who lacked common sense? I mean, just take the whole idea of, well, there's been a lot of statistical studies. I'm not trying to really point out one specific thing. I'll do enough so that we're all caught. So if you're caught, don't feel like I'm pointing you out. But does tobacco use result in a higher percentage of getting cancer? Yes or no? Just statistically, we have all sorts of studies that tell us that. And so what is the government's idea? We need to put warning labels, and we need to give more money to put graphic pictures on packs of cigarettes so people can see the effects of what oral or lung cancer looks like. Oh, well, let's just take another area. Again, I'm not trying to point out one person. I'm just trying to make a point. Statistically, if some teenagers become parents at 15 years old, is the chance of them progressing in society in just a general sense, is their road harder? Yes or no? Yeah. Well, I mean, is there anything that I can eat that is actually harmful to my health? Yes or no? Do I ever eat things that are harmful? Yes or no? Even though I know they're harmful. Even though as I'm cooking bacon yesterday for my children and my son said, Dad, should you eat that? Be quiet, child. Yes. So you understand what I'm saying. It's not just having knowledge, because we can have all this knowledge and yet still lack wisdom. And so some would say, I have wisdom because I have knowledge. Not necessarily. Or some would say, I could never have wisdom because I'm not smart enough to grasp how things work. I just don't understand how that works. I could never be wise, or I don't understand why it works. No, Wisdom is not intellectual in nature. It's actually behavioral in nature. Look what he said in the text. Let him show out of a good conversation his works. A good conversation. It's a beautiful lifestyle. It's these life choices. It's knowing how to live for the glory of God in a fallen world. It's the ability to take the commands and character of God and apply it to life situations right now. Let's just think in context, things like James 1 verse 22, be not but be doers of the word and not what? How many of you have heard something and not done something, right? That's why he's saying don't just be a hearer, but be a doer. It's knowing how to make the right choice right now. It's taking the character and commands of God and letting it filter down into your life choices right now. It's knowing what the will of God is right now. It's Psalm 1. He says this, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. It's his ability to look and say, no, that's a sinful life. No, that's going to result in me not loving God more. In fact, actually, his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. It's the Proverbs, isn't it? In fact, that's why many people will call James the Proverbs of the New Testament. It's the ability. Remember the man that was walking around and the fool that went to the place, the corner where the harlot is. And there is, he's just kind of flirting with the whole thought process. She comes out and meets him and allures him and they go commit immorality. What did that man lack? He didn't lack the knowledge of where the harlot lived, because that's actually what got him into problems. What he lacked is the ability to connect the character of God with life choices right now. It's the ability to make the right choice right now. What's wisdom? Well, it's not intellectual in nature. It's behavioral in nature, but it's demonstrated with a spirit of meekness. He says the meekness of wisdom. You see, meekness is the essential virtue of spiritual leadership. You've got Jesus. Jesus said, I am what? I am meek and I am what? Lowly. Paul said, I should actually minister to you, this church of Corinth. 2 Corinthians 10, he says this, that I'm actually to have a meekness and gentleness of Christ. Meekness is not weakness. It's actually the sweet submission of God and a sovereign control. And it comes out in our reactions, doesn't it? It comes out when somebody needles us. It comes out when there's pressure. It comes out when we're in the middle of a trial. It comes out when we're in our flesh. We're holding up the stability of our family, the financial pressure and the relational issues. And we're juggling it in our own strength. And then God in his kindness allows there to be other circumstances. And it feels like the whole house falls down. And then we just start yelling. We just start shouting. We just start letting everybody know we're not happy, because at the heart of what went on at that moment is I had an idol of people's perception. I had an idol of convenience or comfort. And all of a sudden, because of all these pressures, I can't get to my idol. And he says, when you begin to bow to your idol rather than bow to God, that's not wise. You see, one who is meek handles things in a gentle, kind and thoughtful manner. You know what I find as we're going through this text of scripture, it actually has quite a few applications for today. We live in a culture that really outwardly it begins to tell us that the way ahead is to satisfy self, but so much of the culture drips into the church, and sometimes there's a counter. Sometimes there's conservative people who band together and we begin to say, you know what, I am not going to be like that out there. I'm going to do what's right, and we're going to move forward and we're going to really do what's right. But have you ever seen somebody do something right the wrong way? You ever met a cranky Christian? I am serving Jesus, and I will be happy.
And what he does is he begins to unfold how that really your actions and your behavior and what people see you to manifest tells a whole lot of whether or not you're living in submission to God. Because he then begins to contrast. So he just kind of put it out there. He said, okay, everyone needs wisdom. So what is wisdom? It's not intellectual, it's behavioral in nature. But there is a manner of life that some people would say is spiritual, but actually is not spiritual. And he says, well, actually, if you live in that unspiritual way, then it's actually not wisdom from above. It's actually earthy, devilish, and sensual. So what is this non-wisdom from below? That's really the third question we're asking. He says in verse 14, but if you have bitter envying and strife in your heart, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthy, sensual, and devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. This is not wisdom at all, because wisdom is taking the character of God and applying to life choices. This is actually the opposite of wisdom. This is actually a sensual, devilish life. In fact, sometimes people say, well, I really am spiritual. But he's saying if there's bitter envying and strife in your heart, don't lie. Stop boasting in something that's not a reality. Glory not and lie not against the truth. Do you know that when somebody tries to act spiritual, they probably aren't? But when somebody's trying to communicate that they are spiritual, they aren't. I've done this for how many years? That's usually what they do. I've done, and then years. Don't you understand? And then they put some other pedigree or some other life experience. Or you see, they're trusting in all these manifestations of the past, but they're not really looking at their own life. There's actually reactions that aren't right. There's actually bitter envy. There's actually wars that are going on in the rest of their life. And so you see all these things. And this text says, guess what? If those things are in your life, then at that moment there is a lack of wisdom. He actually helps us. He says, what is wisdom from below? It's actually this manner of life that is full of bitter envy and strife. But the source of it, he uses three words to describe it. And what it does, it really helps us. He says it's earthy, sensual, devilish. Earthy, it means living in a way that is horizontal versus vertical. It's making decisions based on what I see. It's the rationalism dripping into our heart. It's like, okay, so I'm going to evaluate my whole life based on what I see. And so I'll make the right choice right now based on what I rationalize to be true. Appreciate what Pastor Chris brought up in the prayer about not just doing something spiritual, but really doing something spiritual in the power of the Spirit. And sometimes we live this life like we're just kind of making decisions based on what we see, and 2 + 2 must equal 4. So therefore, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do this. But actually, there's an illustration of that in James chapter 4. At the latter portion of that chapter, he said, now go to now ye that say today or tomorrow, we will go to such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what should be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. That the problem was not making plans. The problem was not scheduling a calendar. The problem was this: what you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this and that. The real problem was living life without God. You know what? I'm guilty. Requests come in. I look at a calendar. Okay, it makes sense to go from here to here to here, and then we're going to do that this year, and then we're going to do this next year, and then we're going to do this next year. Haven't you been on this earth long enough that we are not assured of one thing? Life is sudden and life is short, and therefore the problem is not putting things on the calendar. The problem is living life without God. And you know what happens then? If I've got my calendar all put together, and all of a sudden a church calls up and a church says, you know what, we've just been seeking God's face and we don't think that you should come this date. And if my reaction is one of bitter envying and strife, what he's saying is I'm not living in a wise manner. So when your flight gets canceled, so when the payment doesn't come, When there's illness in the family and you erupt with envy and bitterness and strife, then at that moment there's a lack of spirituality. He says, earthy, sensual. It's living according to how I feel. So I look at the facts and now I make a choice based on what I feel. Let's just do a little informal survey. How many of you have ever known what the Word of God said? You knew what the will of God was, but you didn't feel like doing it. That's what that is. It's just, I'm going to live according to how I feel. I'm going to live according to what will make me most happy at this moment. I'm going to live with what can satisfy that idol over here, or I can gain people's perception or some sort of a spiritual perception from other people. Or I'm going to live according to pleasure. But actually, he says it's not just earthy. It's not just sensual. It's devilish. Last week, Christy and I were I don't know if you, those of you that are married, do you ever do any real spouse, you know, like, let's just make sure we're all good. And so we're talking through things and we're plowing through stuff and we're just like, yeah, we're going to do this and this. And you know what? By God's grace, this. And we just want to be one with each other. And things were sailing. You know, there's ebbs and flows in marriage, isn't there? There's seasons that are fun and seasons that are not so fun. And we're just enjoying. I mean, this is like Thursday and Friday and we're communicating. I mean, now it's Saturday and we're pulling into the next church. And then one of us asked the other a question, and they asked the question in such a way that we're bothered. And now there's not communication. I'm sure this is just Christy and I. I'm sure there's no one else that ever has this. This probably does not apply to you guys. What am I thinking? And all of a sudden there's some words. And so now there's a lack of communication. In fact, the volume of our silence is louder than any words that could be said. And then as it kind of unfolds and we're just wrestling through this, and then all of a sudden it dawns on us. I mean, it just dawns on us. You know what? This is devilish in nature. I mean, why would we let this small thing that really doesn't matter affect our ability to communicate the gospel, to communicate the gospel to people who are dead in trespasses as of their sins that need to hear life, but they can't hear life because you got two people at odds with one another over something that doesn't matter. You ever been there? It's devilish. It's distracting in nature. So you get your eyes off the mission and now you're looking very sensual and you're looking very earthy. And so you're trying to put on a show like you're spiritual, but your reactions are revealing because they're full of bitter envy and strife. And he says, don't lie and glory against the truth. And the characteristics of this is the bitter envy. We've been mentioning it, but you know what the bitter envy is? It's actually bitter like an herb, bitter herb. It's like, it's got a bite to it. I made a little omelet thing for myself last night, but when Dad makes stuff, have you ever noticed all the kids want some? And they're doing these little fly bites. They're coming by and getting a bite, and I put jalapenos in it. And one of my children took a bite and they said, that's good, but it's got a bite. I said, good, now back off. And that bitter, it's got an edge. In fact, it's got an intentional edge to hurt people. You ever brought up a suggestion with just a touch of this kind of bitterness so that they would know that you were bothered and you didn't like their life choice? You ever asked a strategic question? Or let's just call it what it is, the leading question. So did you mean to do that? Did you mean to say it like that? And this bite is on there and this bitter envy because you're looking at this other person and now there's conflict. And really, as he's talking about this whole passage, he's going on and he's saying, if you're in fellowship with somebody and now you're beginning to compare yourself to them, this bitter envy has a bite to it where that actually you resent the advantages given to other people. You look at their life. You think it's easier? You look at their life, it looks more convenient, it looks more comfortable, and you begin to resent those people. Have you ever noticed that you're actually fearful that somebody would be equal or better than us? In fact, I heard one man say it this way, we actually would rather God's work not happen if it was done by somebody else. You ever notice that we're most jealous of people that are most like us? I mean, that's why men struggle with men. I mean, they're struggling with the fact that they just bought that bow. That's why women struggle with women. That's why people the same age bracket. That's why young marrieds struggle with young marrieds. And that's why you've got senior saints struggling with other senior saints. We actually struggle with those that are most like us or that we can most readily identify with. I mean, that's why I just don't struggle really with bitter envy towards LeBron James. I mean, I know I look like a superstar basketball guy, but I'm not. I've just never struggled. I've never laid in bed and go, man, I just wish I could be like LeBron. I just struggle with that. But I struggle with people that are itinerant. I struggle with people that are helping churches be planted. I struggle with people that are preaching the pulpit. In fact, especially if one of those people said something negative about me, huh? You ever had somebody that said something negative about you and you knew they had a dog in the fight and they were talking to a neutral party and so that neutral party has now a negative opinion about you, and so when you meet another neutral party, that neutral party begins to praise that other person, and in your heart, what do? Oh, that's great. I'm so glad you think high of that person that just trashed me. Wow, what an example of Christ-likeness. I'm so happy for you. Nope. You want to open up the whole package. And you were like, you know, it would be great if you knew the whole story. Let me just go ahead and tell you about their fleshliness. And I want to tell you about their sinfulness. Because if you knew that, you wouldn't think high of that person. And actually, you might start thinking highly of me. How wicked is that? That's not wisdom from above, is it? That's earthy. That's devilish. That's sensual. And it actually, you know what it results in? He goes on, he says, so this is what we have and this is what it looks like. But it actually, the characteristics is this bitter envy and strife. But he says the result of it is confusion and every evil work. You see the confusion, it's just this disorder, instability, chaos, unsettledness. You know, it could happen in a local church setting. I mean, honestly, if people in the local church are wanting, they're because of their own idol, they're wanting to be in control. Or because of their own idol, they're wanting to be in charge. And they want everyone to revere them as some wise person. And they're going to dispense knowledge in such a way that everyone really goes, oh, that's good. And if that person begins to feel that they're no longer getting the idol stroke, they begin to gather a team to take down other people. And soon it becomes like this risk game. It's like this church is now a risk game, and you got to take this continent, and you get little, you know, bonus armies if you get this person on your team, and then you get some artillery, and that's a really good person to get. And soon there's confusion. You ever walked into an assembly that was full of confusion? You ever gone to a family reunion with confusion? You ever been in a job team? There you are, an employer, and your team is just full of confusion. Because everyone's jockeying for position. You ever sat down to go out to eat with somebody and you were just looking forward to some sweet Christian fellowship, but before you could even talk about Christ, they sent the barrage over, and soon that table became no man's land, and there are minefields everywhere, and now you don't even know where you stand, and you don't even know what they think. You've been in a circumstance where it was like somebody, because of their own personal struggles and their own hurts and their own dissatisfaction, would say barbs, and they'd send over arrows, and you thought you were on good terms, and you thought that everything was okay, but because of their own personal issues, they would say comments that really stung. Confusion and every evil work. It's like, you know what starts to happen? You know what starts to happen when I want my kingdom built? I will do whatever it takes to build it. In fact, I will be like some despot of old where I've got to build a castle. I'll build that castle on the bodies of my slaves. I'll push your dead body to fill my castle. I'll do whatever it takes to get an edifice of me, because I want everyone to know that I'm the king of the castle, and I'll do whatever it takes to get my way. Does this ever happen in families? A teen trumpeting their position. Reaction. Control. Control doesn't work. Maybe leniency will. Maybe just let them go do their own thing.
And soon the confusion, every evil practice, it doesn't work the righteousness of God. Because that's what the text says in James, that the anger of man never works the righteousness of Christ. So what James does, and fourth, he tells us, so what does this wisdom look like? What does this wisdom show? He gives us these illustrations. He says, wisdom from above is first pure. What he does is, if we just look in the passage, let's just read it together and get caught up. He says, for envy and strife is, verse 16, there's confusion in every evil work. But verse 17, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. You see, the wisdom from above is first pure. It's this is the foundational facet of wisdom from above, because, well, let's just remind ourselves. He says, wisdom that is from above. Remember back in verse 5 of chapter 1, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of who? So he asks of God, because that's where God is. God is above. It's this heavenly wisdom. So you can't separate really the idea of heaven from God and God from heaven. That's where God dwells, and that's what makes it heaven, is the fact that God's there. So if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. So it's first pure. And so wisdom from above, it always reflects the purity of God, doesn't it? There's just something about... Have you ever been in a problem-solving team, and maybe this brainstorming team's trying to solve this problem that's affecting the corporation or affecting your community or something, and you're just wrestling through it, and you got this vocal person and this vocal person, and they're just going back and forth, and then all of a sudden, quiet waters run deep, and they point out the one person who hasn't said anything. What do you think? And this person just gives a cutting grasp of the circumstance, and everyone just goes, yes. It's first pure. It just smells and tastes like God. And so the purity that's from above, this wisdom, it just lacks moral defilement. It just lacks sin. There's a lack of things that are sinful, and actually a presence of things that are devotional. So true holiness is not just abstaining from things that are bad. It's actually availing ourselves to a devotional walk with God. It's all the same. It's set apart to serve. It's set apart to give. It's set apart to worship. It's I won't love the world because I love God. It's this simultaneous purity of I just want God. That's what this is to sound like, because every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom there's no variableness, neither shadow of turning. It is to be first and foundationally pure. It's not first as in linear. It's not like you. Okay, we checked that one off. I don't need to look at that again. No, it's the filter by which all the rest flow out. And he says wisdom from above is first pure, and then it's peaceable. People who've met Christ long for peace. Men of wisdom are peacemakers rather than strife causers. They seek to settle rather than provoke disputes. They're not bending in purity. In fact, this is where a point of tension is, isn't it? How can we make a stand for what's right and yet be peaceable simultaneously? Anyone ever felt that tension before? Well, of course you have. To be able to be pure and yet peaceable, because peaceable usually means acquiescence, just really surrendering my rights to them. No, it's not that. It's really standing in purity, but it's with a peaceable demeanor so that you weep if there has to be separation. When I meet somebody who's cavalier and gloating over broken relationships, I don't walk away with a sense of Jesus, do you? But when I meet somebody who's like, no, I think this is what God wants, and I don't think I can go down that road, and there are tears because there's been a Paul Barnabas,
Paul Barnabas should not go down other sides of the road with a pumpedness to their vocabulary. There ought to be a brokenness, because there was just a severing of a relationship and there were problems. You see purity and peaceable, because if it be possible, as much as lieth within you, live peaceably with all men. Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace and the things whereby we may edify one another. Purity, peaceable, gentle. Can I testify? I am terrible at this one. I know where I want to go. Let's roll. Nobody else is taking care of it. Let's go. Gentle. It actually makes allowances for the weakness. You see, that there are people who just have a bent. How many of you know of an area that you know the will of God and you want to do the will of God and you actually make baby steps of obedience to do the will of God, but it sure seems like you struggle a lot in that area? Who has areas like that? You know what? You know what? Sometimes, though, for me, I see a weakness. Maybe it's character. Maybe it's spiritual. And I see that in somebody else. And I'm like, come on, just change. What's your problem? But if somebody sees those areas in me, I'm like, come on, show me some grace. We want grace, but we don't like dispensing it, do we? He says he's being treated. You know, when somebody's no longer teachable, when somebody's got it all figured out, you're in a scary spot. Of any time in the era of this world, you should know that you don't have all knowledge. That there might just be another person that has something to add to that. You see, open to reason, willing to listen and cooperate when a better way is shown. As long as scriptural principles are not being violated, it's reasonable, teachable, submissive. I was listening to one guy and he said this. It's one thing to know your mind. It's another thing to have your mind made up. I've come to so many different meetings where there's going to be some form of conflict resolution. And you sit down and you know within two sentences what that person wants. Two sentences, the vocabulary betrays. The rockets, they're heat seekers. I mean, here they're coming. You're just watching. Here they come. It's one thing to know what you believe. It's another thing to say, I'm perfect. The fool despiseth his father's instruction. The way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. Remember Nabal? He's like, he's trashing David because it looks in vogue not to be on David's team. And so David, he knows what's within his rights. He's going to go kill Nabal. Let's go, boys. Let's go have some Nabal soup. And Abigail meets them. No. Here, take the figs, take the grapes, take the raisins, take all this. No, stop. You don't want this fool's blood to be on your account. And here's David going to proceed. He's got his mind made up. And in God's grace, David turns away from wrath and lets vengeance come from God. He goes on and says, full of mercy and good fruits. A wise man's life is compassion and action. He helps the needy, helps those who are in distress with acts of mercy. It's not just talking about needs. Remember James 2? Remember that? What does he say in James 2? He said, are you just going to love the people that come in with their glitz, their glamour, and they got cash, so therefore that's who you like? Or are you going to love them all? Remember, the context of James is pure religion. Who do we do pure religion to? We do it with who? The fatherless and the widows. That's pure religion. And so the way we treat those people is really what's going on in our hearts. You see, envy is the promotion itself at the expense of others, where mercy is the promotion of others at the expense of self. But then he says, without partiality. And this is rather than having the favoritism based on other people's personality, other people's possessions or their wealth, it's just treating people fairly. It's staying on mission. It's not catering. It's not the church acting one way with one group of people and acting another way with another group of people. It's saying, no, this is what the God's called us to. This is what we're going to do. This is who we are. And then he says, without hypocrisy. And this one should cut to the core of all of us. Masks in the Christian faith have no place. I'm this here. I'm this in the car. I'm this at work. I'm this on the airplane. I'm this at home. I'm this with the kids. I'm this with my spouse. I'm with this with my friends. I'm with this. I'm like this in the garage. No, no, no. There needs to be an authenticity to our Christian life. And the reason why some of us do not have a ministry with others is because there's a missing link of authenticity, and others smell it and they say something's not right. And the result, he tells us, verse 18, is the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace with them that make peace. It's just, it's a fruitful Christ-like life. It's like you're sowing while you're reaping. You're putting down the seeds for next summer and you're picking up the harvest from last. It's just this life that just smells like Jesus. That's what we want, because I'm reading through the Gospels right now, and I'm reading in Mark. I just read this morning. They wound up this crown of thorns and they smashed it into his head. Simultaneously, they won't stop asking the question, are you the King of the Jews? Are you the Son of God? I don't know about you, but when I'm asked the same question 10 times, I usually react. And yet Jesus just takes the nails like a lamb and he absorbs their spit and their slander, claws at his ears. And yet he commits his spirit into the hands of his Father. What are you fighting for, really? What are you battling in your family? Or in the church, or at your work setting? Are you navigating these circumstances with wisdom that's from God? Or are you just pontificating your own words, your own wisdom, your own speech, your own stuff? We need wisdom, don't we? In fact, we need wisdom to want wisdom. And a little bit in James chapter 4, and we're not going to go there, he basically says this: if you will humble yourself before God and you will submit yourself to his desires and resist the devil and draw nigh to him, he'll draw nigh to you and he'll give us grace. Who here needs God's grace? So let's bow our heads together. Do you mind interacting with me? Because I believe as the words